Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the Monday morning voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Richard. It's Monday.
It is indeed. You know what that means?
February the 1st.
It is indeed, which is unique, apparently.
It is. We've got four Saturdays, four Sundays, four Mondays, four Tuesdays, four Wednesdays, four Thursdays, and four Fridays. First time this has happened in 823 years, my friend.
It's not true. It can't be true. Look. Now, this is going to mean nothing. This is like an inside joke that we're starting this pod with, which means nothing to the listener. But I was given this amazing fact yesterday that this is the first time in 800 and however many years that we're starting February with a Monday and we've got four Mondays, four Tuesdays, four Wednesdays, four Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Saturdays. That can't be true. It just cannot be true. I haven't actually fact-checked this, but it can't be true. It makes no sense. Every single February, there are four of every day except for a leap year when, of course, you have the additional day.
So why is it not true? Can you just explain it?
Well, no, it just can't be true. Look, no, that's the problem. I can't explain it. We're not going to start the podcast and go into big depth as to why this isn't true. But it's one of those things when you hear a fact and you know instantly that's not a fact. And just by someone saying it in a certain way, you know, and you get there, wow, really? That's amazing. But it's not true. It cannot physically be true.
Do you know what? Obviously, I'm not going to spend my time looking into this, but I did have a very quick Google before we came on, and the same story was floating around in 2016, and the same number of years as well, 823 years.
There you go. So that was 4 years ago, 5 years ago, sorry.
At least, however, there are 52 weeks in a year. That's a good thing.
No, because then this is, okay, I know what you're doing here, but this is the bit that winds me up about so much of what we... There aren't 52 weeks in the year. There's 52 weeks and one day. Why don't people say there's 52 weeks in one day? You're going to get me onto all my quirky little things that frustrate me about life.
The 52-week thing, I mean, I've never really thought about it that much. There are 52 weeks in a year. I've never thought, are there exactly 52 weeks in a year? So what is it, 52 weeks in a day?
Yes.
Right, but no one's going to refer to that. There are still 52 weeks in a year.
No, but there's 52 weeks and a day. That's my point. It bugs me. The fact that the one that's a little bit worse is when people say, oh yeah, 4 weeks in a month. It's like nowhere near 4 weeks. Not even close. When you've got a 31-day month, it is nowhere near. So look, again, this isn't the way that I want to start this podcast. You're going to get me in a mood now before we talk about all the goalkeeping action this week. But yes, you're going to get into my quirky mind. The other one that I will drop in, and this is something that does wind me up, knives. Luxury item as far as I'm concerned. You can make do with a fork and a spoon. Why people have knives is beyond me. Again, it's just money making.
Why someone would eat with a spoon as the vessel that would normally be the fork is beyond me.
Spoon, largest surface area. You can get more food on a spoon. It just makes sense.
And money, it's like the cutlery people have been trying to scam you this whole time.
Scamming
they
us
all come
for
in
years.
One set.
Scamming us for years. Do you know what you can get? You can get a spork. Actually, that's a mixture of a spoon and a fork. You don't even need a spoon or a fork now. You just have a spork.
Can you bring this back to goalkeeping? It's quite remarkable we're actually having this conversation because you're in a rush. It's transfer deadline day. Very, very busy. Your phone has been off the hook. So we've got to get through this quite quickly.
We have, but we have got lots to get through. So I will not rush the goalkeeping podcast because this is the highlight of the week, or two highlights of the week, and it is an important day. Lots going on.
Okay, well, let's take it slow because we've got some correspondence. We had a good email in, and this actually came in last night, and I'm going to go straight to it because it's topical. Mm-hmm. This is from Owen Williams, who says, "Hi guys, loving the pod, which I discovered a few months ago. Very useful insight to a dad of a young goalkeeper and therefore amateur goalkeeper coach. I'm also a Wimbledon fan," he says. "Not sure if Richard has had any involvement, but I'm interested in his views on our goalkeeper strategy. There seems little consistency in what we're looking for, which is a reflection of the squad as a whole, which is now managerless." Of course, Glyn Hodges has parted the club by mutual consent, which is the company line. Owen goes on and says, 6.5 season loans over the past 3 years, varying skill sets and varying degrees of success. So he goes through them. I'll quickly rattle through them now. Tom King, decent all round, but had a shocking loan and left confidence ruined. And Ramsdale, unbelievable recruitment, kept us up almost single-handedly. He and Henderson, the best goalkeepers I've seen in Leagues 1 and 2. Nice lad too. Nathan Trott, young, great physical attributes, good shot stopper and kicker, but didn't leave his 6-yard box. Never heard him say a word. Got bullied in crowded penalty areas. Probably a reasonable gamble, but obviously lacked match experience his first loan. Joe Day, almost the opposite, very experienced in lower leagues, vocal, not great with his feet, but good in the air, helped us scrape ahead of Tranmere and survive when COVID ended last season. And Connell Truman, the oddest choice, says Owen. When we lost even more experience in defence over the summer and needed a voice and presence in goal, we brought in a relatively small, quiet goalkeeper with not that many games under his belt that Birmingham fans didn't seem to rate. Not many big errors, but conceded lots of could-he-have-done-better-there goals. Hard to tell with one camera angle, very true in the lower leagues. And finally, Sam Walker. Again, a complete change of skill set. Tall, plenty of lower league matches, early days, but seems to command his area better. Hope it's enough to help us survive again. He said, it should be said, one, I'm happy with having loanees as first choice. Premier League and Championship clubs hoard so many that it's an efficient use of our limited funds, although I'd be delighted if one of our youngsters sticks around to give it a go. And two, I really rate Ashley Bayes as a coach.
Wow, fantastic. First and foremost, as always, anyone that writes in, really appreciate your input. And stuff like this I love, because it's something that, I mean, where do I start? Firstly, I'll start by saying I do actually watch Wimbledon, or certainly when I was allowed to, I'd get to quite a few games, given that it's not too far from where I live. Fully agree in regards to Ashley Bayes. For me, one of the very best in the country, and certainly the success that he's had personally and with Wimbledon, I think has to be highlighted. Really, when you talk about a goalkeeper coach, someone who is so energetic, so positive in what they do, again, just sets the tone for a session. Really, really good coach. But I've got to be honest, I agree with much of what's said there, in that you talk about a strategy, and one of the biggest things for me is that I think certain goalkeepers fit certain environments. Now, when it comes to Wimbledon, look, we know a lot about Aaron Ramsdale now. We've seen a lot. I know he's had a little bit of stick recently, but actually, you look back now, you can put the pieces together and understand why he was as successful as he was at Wimbledon. He is a big personality in terms of the way in which he plays. You know, he is very accurate when he goes long. And that's no disrespect to Wimbledon, but I think it's fair to say there's still a reasonably direct style of football that they play. So ideally, you're going to need a goalkeeper with certain attributes. And it is interesting that they've gone for a selection of goalkeepers who are all completely different. It's a fantastic point. And to me, I don't fully understand that. The caveat to that, though, is that at certain clubs, of course, when you are looking for a goalkeeper, you may not have a ton of money to spend. So you are reliant on going to a Premier League club or a Championship club. And ideally, your budget might be a few hundred pounds a week because you're spending your money elsewhere in the team. And sometimes, if you get a goalkeeper of Championship caliber, there might be a completely different goalkeeper to your previous goalkeeper, but you might see that the pros outweigh the cons. So you kind of fit them into your team however you fit them into your team. So I think it's more to do with that than anything else. I certainly think when it comes to recruitment, Ashley Bayes knows what he's doing. You know, he's got a really good eye for a goalkeeper, knows how to produce a goalkeeper. But my gut would say it's more that. The fact that they're getting different types of goalkeepers is largely due to what's available and what funds they have.
Okay, Owen, thank you very much for that email. Really good email. We've had a couple of voice notes in too as well, Richard, on WhatsApp, so we'll get to them over the course of the coming podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GKUnion, hello at goalkeepersunion.net, on our number 07503673020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, over to Goodison. Everton 0, Newcastle 2. Jordan Pickford made a very good save from a Callum Wilson header in the first half. He then conceded from a Callum Wilson header in the second half, and then again in stoppage time, which is the goal. Naturally, it is Jordan Pickford, after all, isn't it? So people are going to talk, which has got people talking. Just that, on the Twitter sphere and elsewhere in the studios, the pundits, etc. What did you make of it?
Well, in terms of the save and the first goal conceded, the interesting thing to me is that he did a very similar thing for both involvements. So the first one was fantastic save, has to be said. Moved to his left, corner comes in, moved to his near post, firm header, and the reactions he showed. It was, for me, a classic Pickford save, I would say, in that so sharp, moved quickly, and it is a brilliant, brilliant save. It was the same movement he did for the goal. So anyone that's questioned him for the first goal, I think this is one of those situations where, for me, where you can't have it both ways. You know, he's come to that near post in the way that you should do. The corner comes in, it's what, 6 yards out, slightly towards the near. So you then take a step to your left. Because if you imagine you're in the middle of your goal, at that point you need to take the step to your left to then cover that like near half of the goal. Now, with that first one, of course, he makes a very, very good save. With the second one, when it's headed into the far post like that with pace, it's just too much distance to cover. Now, if you're going to be hypercritical, you could say, well, could he get a step in? I think even if he gets a step in, maybe he gets ever so slightly closer. But I do think that if you take up that positioning, you're never going to be able to save the ball on the far post. The question for me would be more along the lines of, why don't you have someone on the far post? You know, and again, this is, I'm sure the older goalkeepers out there will agree with me on this one. For me, I always feel that you've got enough people in the box and enough people on the field in order to have someone covering the back post, because that's always going to be the area that you're a little bit weak.
Okay, well, before we get to the second goal, we put this out on Twitter. There was a kind of similar scenario-ish in the game involving West Brom and Fulham, where Bobby Decordova-Reed was through on goal with Sam Johnstone. He wasn't as wide as Callum Wilson was for his goal, I don't think. On this occasion, Decordova-Reed hit the post, but we put a couple of pictures out just to see what people thought and get their opinions on that second goal for Newcastle by Callum Wilson. Here is what they said. Christopher at CK Black M says his indecisiveness put him out of position, probably having gotten run around earlier didn't help. That's when Callum Wilson rounded Pickford and hit the post. He looked like he might be playing through injury. You can't just stop and let the offender pick out his spot, though. Dean Merrick says, fair, make a decision to come. Fair being the criticism, make a decision to come. You have to keep going. Jimmy at underscore Cabbers says, harsh, it's because it's Pickford. Imagine if he was stood more steps to the other side and the ball went in on his near post. Lethal Brizzle says, the criticism should be aimed at the first goal. Positioned himself way too far over to the left and made his recovery for the header impossible. Mark Farrington says, Pickford does leave too much of the goal open. He never really closes the angles, just the near post. I'd argue Johnstone has positioned himself better, but then narrows his body as if he was protecting himself rather than the goal as Reed hits it. Both very poor moments. James Redfern, how can he save it when the striker is trying to score? Dave Johnstone, Johnstone's angles are far better than Pickford in this instance, in my opinion. Snorky says Pickford hesitated too much, could have made it a lot harder for Wilson, but doubted his positioning and went backwards as Callum Wilson set himself. David Turner, he did come out and then went back a yard. Not much wrong with the angles, just didn't set himself early enough. Gary Hogan, not a big fan of his, but it's harsh. It's the last minute of the game and one of the best strikers in the league gets the ball completely on his own due to Everton chasing the game. If anything, Wilson's bad first touch affected Pickford's movement and decision making. And Keat says, could have made it a bit harder for him by closing him down instead of stopping. And Richie Cook says, take his distribution away and Pickford is a beyond average goalkeeper. His basics are terrible, constantly flapping at corners, making defence nervous. Johnston's position is much better than Pickford's.
Well, there you go. Fantastic tweets, as always. We do thank you for those. I'll just touch on the one, I think it was Lethal Bizzle, I think, from memory.
Lethal Brizzle.
Oh, Lethal Brizzle, my bad. And do you know what? I say he's right. So he mentioned that the position he took up for the first goal, and that's where I just want to reiterate my point for having someone on the back post. I think certainly if you keep goal in the way that Jordan Pickford does, which, by the way, I did as well. I think that the moment the corner comes in like that, the most danger is at the near post. So in the way that he did, you'll come to your left, but you leave such a big gap at the far post. I think there needs to be a little bit of appreciation for that. And certainly I would want one of my players to then cover in, and then all of a sudden you protect that goal. So it's a good point he makes, but I'd just say for me, that would be more the defender that could really help you there, or again, the manager setting up in such a way to make sure that that weak spot is covered. Look, in terms of the second one, and it's interesting, the fact that we've got so many different opinions there, that for me is key, because I think, look, I could argue this every which way. Firstly, in terms of his position at point of impact, it didn't do him any favours, I don't think, that one of the camera angles I saw, it was kind of behind Callum Wilson, but it kind of made it look as if Jordan Pickford is almost on the post. You know, it almost looked like he'd given him the whole goal. Now, you look at a few different angles, that isn't the case. Maybe he's, you know, a foot or two slightly too far to his left, but we're talking minimal. It's not yards. It's a foot at most. Right, what could he have done? Well, look, you saw that he moved towards the ball. Now, had he have fully engaged, of course, we've criticised goalkeepers on this very show for being too advanced and making it very easy to go round and very easy to score. And strikers are so good now. Often when the keeper is too advanced, that is the go-to play. Normally, you can just kick it wide and put it in an empty net. So you can see that he's thought about that. As he stepped out, he's realised, okay, I'm probably going to give him that situation, which is why he's decided then to drop and to hold. What he's done on a positive is he has said to Callum Wilson, you've got to score. I'm not giving you this goal. You've got to score. You've got to hit the bottom corner. In the same way that me and you have spoke about this about Marcus Rashford a couple of times, I remember. And it's a you know, from a keeper's point of view, in the same way that Sam Johnson did. Now, look, you could argue that he did it ever so slightly better than Jordan Pickford, but he's done the same thing. He said, go on then, score. I'm going to stand here. I'm going to take up a good position. You now need to find the bottom corner if you're going to get a goal. Now, in fairness to Callum Wilson, that's exactly what he did. Now, if Jordan Pickford is a foot out of position, if we could argue that maybe he'd be a foot more advanced, but I do think, again, we've got to take pre-existing thoughts about Jordan Pickford out of this and take it in isolation. Now, is this a goalkeeping error or is this a good goal? For me, this is a good finish. Now, could Jordan Pickford have done something slightly different? Potentially, but again, I think we've got to be careful when we're nitpicking. And this is why I mention our pre-existing thoughts on someone, because I think that sometimes we can then look at this and try and find fault where I just think we've got to be a little bit careful. I don't think this is a glaring error.
Yeah, I just feel like he can't win anymore, Jordan Pickford. Martin Keown actually said he left his angles and lost himself a little bit there. And then Darren Fletcher, the commentator, said when he made the save in the first half from Callum Wilson, I think that's the one thing about Jordan Pickford that's pretty much beyond question. The ability to make saves like that. Very, very agile goalkeeper. An excellent shot stopper. Which is a lovely comment to make. But at the same time, that is what some people call him into question for. I think the bit that's pretty much beyond question is his distribution. That's what everyone says he's on point for. And in that game as well, made a couple of lovely, lovely passes out from the back. But we'll move on. It's Jordan Pickford. We speak about him far too much. And sometimes it's far too negative, especially as some of those tweets speak about, to be fair.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm more than happy to move on. Just to make a note as well. And again, we spent so long talking about Jordan Pickford, but certainly not an easy place to go. And for Newcastle to win and keep a clean sheet, I think we have to give a big thumbs up to Carl Darlow again as well, given that, of course, he has a little bit more pressure now that Dubravka's fit.
I agree completely. And another clean sheet, Emi Martinez, yet again. Two big saves from him in the second half in Aston Villa's win over Southampton. First from Shea Adams and then great save from a Jan Bednarek header.
Fantastic. The question I'd ask here, because there was a third big save, the one that was the goal that was given offside at VAR, is if any of those three...
what? Just VAR.
VAR. The question I'd ask is that if any of those three ended up as goals, would he have got criticism? And the reason I say that is that they are three very, very good saves. But for me, this is where you just need that element of luck as a goalkeeper. When you make that big save, but you can't, for whatever reason, you just can't get it out of play. You can't get it into safety. So you are reliant on that little bit of luck. Now, because the ball was then cleared by defenders, the commentators are gushing about the save, saying just how good they are. But if any of those end up in goals, do the commentators criticise him?
Same, I suppose, with the Alex McCarthy save in the first half as well from Ollie Watkins.
Yeah, exactly the same. Which, by the way, again, big save. Got down very quickly, got his forearm to it. So he couldn't necessarily angle it where he wanted to. But once again, the moment your defender clears it, it's deemed a very good save. Yet, if someone scores, it's deemed a mistake. Or it might be deemed a mistake because, again, the classic comment will come out, oh, could he have got a better angle? So again, this just goes back to that point we make so often on this show that sometimes there isn't a middle ground. Sometimes it is either a very good save or a mistake.
A goalless draw at the Emirates between Arsenal and Manchester United. Can we talk about that Bernd Leno save from Fred? Because Martin Tyler thought it had taken a deflection. On first glance, Gary Neville said that there wasn't much power in it from Fred. But I think that almost, is this fair, made it a little harder for Bernd Leno because it wasn't a powerful effort. It was almost in slow motion.
Oh, it's a brilliant save. Also consider the angle at which the ball's dropping because it's not a fierce strike where it's rising the whole time. It's starting so high and dropping low. So for him to get the reach and get across, and also the element of surprise, because it's a very unusual shot that he's facing there. It's one of them where, again, you're going to be a few yards out of your goal when you set, and he might not have reacted instantly because, again, it's not been smashed. There's part of it as well that you'll always look at the person striking the shot and you'll read the body language. Now, as he's reading Fred's body language, he's probably thinking he's going to be passing it or putting it back into the danger area. So the moment then all of a sudden the ball's coming towards you, he will be that split second later by the time he's got that initial movement in. So to then get the reach, the spring, the power that he gets to his left and just the fingertips, that view from behind was a beautiful view. And you can see it's going in the corner. You can see the look on Fred's face. Look, again, for me, I don't think it got anywhere near the plaudits that it deserved. It was, I think it got given a good touch, I think they said. But it's a fantastic save. And in the end, you could argue that it earned them a point.
Yeah, he did credit it, to be fair, Gary Neville. He said, very good touch from Leno. So he was positive, I suppose, eventually. A good save from Vicente Guaita, again from close range. This is the type of save that I know often when you refer to a goalkeeper's save, you say it's a classic, whatever, whoever, whichever goalkeeper it is. But he makes a lot of save like this, I think. It was a downward header from Willian Jose late on.
Yeah, it was. It was very good. Guaita, for me, sets that little bit lower than I would argue your average goalkeeper. And I think for saves like this, it does help him. The good thing about this is one of those horrible ones that bounces in front of you. It is quite firm. It's into the ground. You can never quite predict the bounce, but the technique he uses gives himself a great chance of making the save because he's got a big surface area with his hands, using both hands, and very, very sharp. He's such a sharp goalkeeper. Really enjoy watching him play. And yeah, we have to credit him. Very good save.
No clean sheet for Nick Pope on this occasion, and Burnley lost at Chelsea, but good reflexes. There was one particular save where he kept out a deflected effort. It was a cross from Callum Hudson-Odoi, deflected off Ben Mee, but a good save from Pope.
Really good save, and again, one that arguably, in my opinion, didn't quite get the credit that it deserved because it's the surprise element of it. You know, we touched on Leno's save, and for very different reasons, how many times do we see it where balls fly past the goalkeeper, own goals, because, of course, you're not going to read an own goal. So for this one, where it has taken the deflection off his own defender, the speed of reaction spring, also the awareness and intelligence, because it was a fingertip save in order, but you could almost see that he's guiding it where he wants it to go. So the speed of thought to make that decision to place it where he wanted to place it into such a safe area, very good again.
A defeat at home for Leicester, 3-1, they were beaten by Leeds. Nothing really that Kasper Schmeichel could have done with any of the goals. So we'll focus on two very good saves that he made in the game. First, a header from Patrick Bamford that he almost squashed underneath the bar. Brilliant. And the second, down low to his left from Rafinha. Very good save.
Yeah, excellent. That first one was great to watch in slow motion when you saw it from looking at the goal and the way in which he's got there. And it's like he's just held it on the crossbar, and then it's obviously dropped down. Fantastic save. But yeah, the one down to the left, so sharp. I'm involved in a lot of different goalkeeping groups, and they all lit up, as you could imagine, when he made that save in particular. So look, another very positive performance for him. Disappointing for Leicester, though, it has to be said. But another positive word for Melier. I thought, again, some solid saves. And it's interesting, we're on deadline day now. It doesn't look like Leeds are going to do anything, which I didn't think they would. But it's amazing how many stories are linking Leeds with different goalkeepers, the likes of Sam Johnson and several others that have been linked. But it just shows the belief that they have in Melier. And it's nice for a goalkeeper as young as he is to be given the backing like he has. And it's really paying dividends.
We'll finish in the Premier League at the Amex. A good win for Brighton against Spurs. Few good saves from Hugo Lloris in this one. A very good touch around the post from Robert Sanchez as well. But there was another moment in this game that you just want to focus on.
Yes, there is, Matthew. And it's not really one that has anything to do with goalkeeping. It was the outfield lad, I think his name's Connolly, had a chance just to finish it off at 2-0. But this, for me, was interesting because it was such a simple finish. And he was almost a little bit lackadaisical as he's gone to just put it into the empty net. Defender comes flying across, makes the block. And, of course, the score stays at 1-0.
Who we must credit, by the way, out of Ireland, making that save. If a goalkeeper makes that save, we're saying the goalkeeper should be credited. So at the same time, despite the striker not doing what he should do, it's still a very good piece of defending from out of Ireland.
I will agree with you there, Matthew. The bit that got me was that Connolly didn't actually really get any stick for it whatsoever. And I kind of thought, what is the equivalent of a goalkeeper? So a striker missing an open goal effectively, what is the equivalent for a goalkeeper and how does it get reported? And for me, there's just such a difference. A goalkeeper does something similar and they are getting slated. Look, we're talking about Jordan Pickford here, a one-on-one, whether he could have gone a little bit closer, dropped a bit deeper, whether his angle was quite right, like quite a small detail, and he is getting slammed. And yet you've got this striker that is so lazy, misses this open goal, and no one says anything.
You got this striker, these blaming strikers, for crying out loud. Actually, we're talking so hypothetically here because Brighton won the game, they got the 3 points. But if Spurs go up the other end and Sanchez, I don't know, drops one or it slips through his legs, who then gets the blame for that draw?
Sanchez.
Is it Connolly or is it Sanchez?
Sanchez? Of course he does. And that's my point. Look, I know we've made a feature of it, the whole commentary corner, and we've got to be a little bit careful because we go a bit overboard sometimes. But I just think that's my point, is that I think the equivalent is not reported in the same way. Look, my point is deeper than just the game, because I think there's enough positivity out there now for goalkeepers. So many goalkeeping accounts, which is fantastic. And the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned, because that's the bit that gets me when I watch these games, is that if you're going to criticise a goalkeeper in the way that they do, the way that the commentators do, they have to go overboard at the same time with the outfield lads. But it just seems like there is a very different mentality with, certainly with strikers. You know, some of the cliches that you hear in regards to strikers, which ultimately is all very positive about them getting in there and don't worry about missing chances, and you miss 9 chances but you score the 10th, you're still the hero type thing. It is completely different when it comes to goalkeeping. Now, look, I'm not saying that then goalkeepers should be given an easy ride. Of course, we want the reporting to be good. We want it to be concise. But then I also think there needs to be a little bit more balance for both goalkeepers and outfield players when you're giving the kind of feedback you are as a pundit.
Richard, I cannot believe it.
Yes, Matthew, it is the Championship rundown. We start on Friday night, where Reading were victorious 3-1 against Bournemouth. I want to touch on Raphael in this game, because no chance on the goal. It was a free kick. It was a free kick that went through the wall, and his reaction, he was perplexed. Is that the word?
Apoplectic.
Apoplectic with rage he was when he came running out. And do you know what? He was right. And it's something that would have bugged me too, because we've seen, in fact, you've taken a picture, I think, and you put it on the Twitter, which is very good. But at the point that it should hit the wall, you've got two players that have effectively jumped sideways, quite cowardly, let's be honest about it. It's gone right through the middle of them and it's gone right into the corner. But I quite like the fact that he did react in the way that he did. And I think it's a good one for young goalkeepers listening in. If you've got a wall, again, really work with that wall and make sure that they stand as firm as they can. And if they don't, in the same way that Raphael did, I think you have to hold them to account.
Yeah, you do, I suppose. Lucas Joao was one of the players. Alpha Semedo was the other. Joao did score a very good goal in the first half, so kind of evens it out.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. There was another goal in this game, just to touch on, a free kick. Asmir Begovic got down to his right. Do you know what? In the same way in which we're talking earlier about when your defenders can come and help you out and clear it, and this might be one of those that's considered a reasonable save. It's one of those horrible ones. I remember conceding a very similar one myself at Upton Park back in the day, where free kick goes your side, bounces just in front of you, very difficult to hold. So it's one, can you try and shovel it wide? Can you try and get the angle? Very difficult. You are reliant on, ideally, a defender coming and clearing. It wasn't the case in this situation, and Reading scored and did win the game 3-1. Moving on to Saturday, lots of games in the Championship on Saturday. We start at Norwich, a clean sheet for both Krul and Bettinelli. Birmingham drew with Coventry, 1-1. Blackburn 1, Luton 0. Another clean sheet for Thomas Kaminski here. Interesting game at Brentford. Brentford running out 7-2 winners against Wickham. But I felt a little bit here for Ryan Alsop. Not a great deal of chance on the goals. Actually made a really good double save with his feet. Quite an inventive save, it has to be said. Certainly the second one, when he's down on his right-hand side, but he has the awareness just to move his left foot and deflect it back into play. Really good save. And a good save from David Rea as well, down low to his left, kind of using his leg and hand to shove the ball away. Cardiff drew 1-1 with Millwall. Good save here from Alex Smithies. One of those classic ones where you are one-on-one, you come out, you decide to spread, and it's hit the end of his toe and just gone round the post. Perfect spread from Alex Smithies, and in the end, good enough to save them a point. Derby won 1-0 against Bristol City. Interestingly, that Keller Roos didn't play this game, kept the two clean sheets prior to this, but credit to Marshall, he's come in. Another clean sheet for him and a big win against Bristol City here. Huddersfield drew 1-1 with Stoke. Stoke decided to go with Angus Gunn ahead of Joe Bursic for this one. He did make a good save second half onto the crossbar. Nottingham Forest 0, Barnsley 0. Brilliant save from Bree Samba. So explosive. About 20 yards out, the shot, flying in the top corner. The speed at which he got up to his right, top hand to tip it over the bar. Quite brilliant save. And again, enough to save them a point in this one. Rotherham 1, Swansea 3. And finally, Sheffield Wednesday winning 1-0 against Preston. A lovely clean sheet for Mr. Kieran Westwood.
Lovely stuff, Richard. I think one to pick out from there was Bree Samba's save from Herbie Kane. A lovely tip over the bar.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I touched on it in the roundup, but just for me, Brees Amber's an interesting one. You know, the more that you watch him, he is so explosive, moves so quickly. And this is one of those saves. I feel like I say it too often about goalkeepers, but there's not many goalkeepers in the world that can save this. And this is one of those saves. And I just think that with the raw power that Brees Amber has got, the speed of his feet to move to the right in the way that he did and the technique he showed, I think that this beats most goalkeepers. Quite a brilliant save.
Okay, we'll move on to the EFL, shall we?
Or, as I like to refer to it, the best of the rest.
Of course, indeed. Ellery Balcombe, what a hero. Not only had he saved Conor McGrandall's deflected effort, he then went and saved two penalties, one from George Grant, one from Anthony Scully. He went early with both, and he held on to both.
He did. I mean, there's not many that have saved two penalties in a game of football before. He's in quite a unique club, so a big well done to him.
Go on, go on. Do you want to quickly just air it?
Air what?
I'm presuming that this refers to a game that you played in.
Oh,
that you made two penalty saves from.
So awkward. Now you mention it. yeah. No, God, I'm really embarrassed now. I didn't want to bring this up on this podcast. But yeah, St Mary's back in 2008, I believe it was. I think the first one was from McGoldrick down to my left. And the second one, I forget the name. Really should have Googled this beforehand. But yep, two penalty saves. Clean sheet in a 2-0 or a 3-0 win, I remember. So
12 years ago.
12 years ago, yeah, but we're talking about Ellery Balcombe here, so a big well done to him. By the way, really interesting performance. Delighted for Ellery Balcombe, done so well since he's gone there. One of England's bright young hopes, has to be said, of course, in and around the under-21 setup. Great loan for him, this. Really good opportunity. And they've had an interesting time, haven't they? Doncaster with Joe Bursick doing as well as he did, Joe Lumley doing as well as he did, and now Ellery Balcombe. So they've had three very good loan goalkeepers. But yeah, just want to touch on the save he made before the penalty saves and then the penalty saves themselves. But the save he made beforehand was very, very good. Deflected effort up to his right, moved very well, good save. But of course, the two penalties we are going to touch on, you get the impression he knew where they were going to go. Certainly the first one, he moved very early. The interesting thing about both saves is that he held both, which is so unusual now, but dived to his left on the first one, made the save. We do have to mention how he gave away the second penalty. But this, for me, and this is where we talk about young goalkeepers going on loan and you learn a lot of lessons. Look, he's going to come out of this game with a 9 out of 10, and rightly so. Absolute hero, brilliant performance. But of course, giving away the second penalty in the way that he did, where he's chasing a ball towards the corner of the box, little bit of a rush of blood, went for the challenge that he probably didn't need to go for, and of course gave away the penalty. Now, certainly he made amends for it by making the save, but just a nice lesson moving forward, and certainly a goalkeeper we've touched on before, and one that I've no doubt we're going to be talking about many times again.
Another aspect of this that I love, and we see this so often when a goalkeeper saves a penalty. The first time I ever remember seeing it was in the 1991 FA Cup final, Mark Crosley saving from Gary Lineker. And I think Gary Charles went up to him, a couple of other Forest players went up to him. And in no uncertain terms, he told them to leave him alone and go away and focus on, I think, an incoming corner that was swinging in as a result of his save. Balcombe did a similar thing. He saved the penalty. Everybody went to celebrate. Go away. Leave me alone. Just go away. Go away. What is that with goalkeepers? Why don't you want to be credited? Or is it because maybe the players have been giving you some stick beforehand? What is it?
I mean, we just don't like outfielders. I think it's as simple as that. No, I don't know. I think when you're that in the zone, I think when you're that pumped and you've made the save and actually instantly you're then wanting to do the next thing, and when you've got people coming around crowding you, it's almost like, look, no, we're playing. Come on, crack on. We'll celebrate afterwards. I think it's that. I mean, I wasn't like that, though. I quite enjoyed the adulation.
You're in forward roles.
I milked it. Yeah, I would be there. I'd be waving to the fans and everything. So, I mean, I can't comment exactly because I never reacted in that way.
Okay, Mark Travers, good saves from Alec Wilkes and Lewis Potter, but sadly to no avail as Swindon fell to defeat at Hull. Christy Pym, backpedalling. Another backpedaler. We've had a few of these in recent podcasts. He kept out a looping Sean Wally effort. Peterborough did lose the game, but a good save from Pym. Really quick feet.
Very quick feet. It's a fantastic save, actually, because the save starts way before the shot is taken. It's the realisation that as the ball's coming through, for those who haven't seen it, he's backpedalling from probably 15 yards out, and the ball's been played through. It's one of those balls that's bounced, and as the outfield players hit it, he's already gone 10 yards moving backwards, and he's still on the move when the strike's hit. But this is quite intelligent goalkeeping for me, because had he set, he probably would have then struggled to have continued to go back and make the save. But he's read the game. He's realised that the chances are he's going to try and put it over his head. It's a great execution. It's going just under the bar. And it's good technique to get back, firm hand, over the bar, and then also avoid the post.
Very well done. Christy, Gillingham's Alex McDonald denied a rocket as Lee Burge touched his effort onto the bar. In the same game, I think you've spoken about this already, Jack Bonham saving Grant Leadbitter's spot kick, but the rebound was bundled in. He did, however, have a hand in the late equaliser, a lovely bit of Route 1.
Indeed, lovely bit of Route 1. Yeah, I felt for him on the penalty because it's a brilliant save, and it's one of those horrible moments when you see it on the line and there's just nothing you can do, and he's managed just to scoop it away as far as he can. But you've then got the take of Leadbitter, of course, following it up and scoring. The bit that did bug me, actually, it wasn't just Leadbitter that was following it up. You actually see the picture as the ball's bundled in the net. There's five Sunderland players and there's one Gillingham player, you know, so no one else following up. But one of those things for Jack. But as you mentioned, he did have a hand. They have gone direct. It is a flick on, and it's a very, very good finish, it has to be said. And a great moment for them, last minute of the game. Big point at the Stadium of Light.
Hokey-cokey goalkeepers continues at Newport County. Nick Townsend back in. A couple of good saves, but Tom King back on the bench.
Yeah, interesting, because it looked like Tom King had done very well, but I guess this goes back to the conversation that we've had so many times about goalkeepers in the Premier League, the likes of Darlow, Dubravka. At which point is your stock enough that you are then deemed to be the first choice goalkeeper? You kind of felt that Tom King may well have done enough, but of course Townsend has done very, very well. Look, when you're in a successful team, it's even harder for goalkeepers sometimes, because you have got two first choice goalkeepers effectively here. Certainly two first choice goalkeepers in League Two. It must be very, very difficult to keep them both happy.
Okay, just a couple more to finish. Lawrence Vigouroux, another decent save. Leyton Orient did lose against Bolton, but at 0-0, he made a great save from a close-range Nelson Delfuonzo effort.
Yeah, fantastic. A goalkeeper that really intrigues me, just in terms of how he moves. He is so powerful. Distribution, we know, is very, very good. And this season, you really feel like he's come of age to an extent. You know, very good start to his career at Swindon. Of course, for those that remember, he had like £1 million price tag put on his head, I remember, one summer. Things didn't quite work out as planned, and found himself playing in South America for a period of time, which is incredibly random. But now that he's back over here, doing so well at Leyton Orient, I know that he's very well liked there. And again, he was excellent in this game. Nothing he could have done, certainly. Unfortunately, they did go down 2-0.
And lastly, experienced campaigner Carl Leatheren has rejoined Derek Adams at Morecambe. A good save from a Paul Lewis header. And it's good to see him back. His first EFL appearance in more than a year. He was at Salford before joining Chesterfield last summer. He tweeted as well, Leatheren, and said, "I've cancelled my Chesterfield contract today by mutual consent. An opportunity has come up that I feel is too good to turn down. I would like to wish the lads all the best for the rest of the season." A nice touch.
Yeah, it was a good save, and it's a nice touch yet to leave in the way that he did. And goalkeeper that I've got a lot of time for, because I think that, you know, when you look at his history, the amount of clubs that he's been with, and again, still with the love, the passion for the game, to want to keep pushing himself. And again, it's an opportunity to be playing in the league. And when you've got that kind of desire, that kind of ambition, you really want people like that to succeed. Clean Sheet Club. Now, Matthew, did you know that there is a club called the British Lawnmower Racing Association?
I was not aware of this, no.
Well, do you know what? That club has got nothing compared to our club. That's right. It is time for Clean Sheet Club. And we start with Carl Darlow. First, we start with Carl Darlow. First clean sheet since keeping it clean against Liverpool at the end of December. Vicente Guaita, 3-5 for him. Edison, 7 on the spin. Bernd Leno, 5-6 in the Premier League. David De Gea, 3-5. Emi Martinez, the first Villa keeper to record 10 clean sheets in a single season since Brad Friedel back in 2009-10. Eduard Mendy, 3-4 for him. Robert Sanchez, 3-3. Tim Krul, 6-7 either side of his injury. Marcus Bettinelli, first since mid-December. Thomas Kaminski, 3-4. David Marshall, back in and back to cleanliness. Bree Samba, up to 7 for the campaign. Bradley Collins, first league clean sheet in nearly a year after playing second fiddle to Jack Walton. Kieran Westwood, second in just 7 games this term. Andrew Fisher, first in 5. George Long, slowly racking them up with 4-7 since his return. Ellery Balcombe, 4 clean sheets and 5 wins in his first 6 appearances as a professional goalkeeper. Jack Stevens, 10 League One outings without defeat for Oxford, 6 of which have been without conceding. Matthias Arkic, 5-7 at Shrewsbury. Mark Howard, 3 in a row after going 9 without. Paul Farman, back from Carlisle's COVID break to pick up where he left off with a win and a clean sheet. Matt Jilks, a first win and clean sheet since mid-December. Lewis Thomas, 2 on the spin for him. Josh Griffiths, and 2 on the spin for him. Scott Davis, a second of 2021.
Very, very good indeed. The table, as things stand, Freddie still alone at the top. 14 in 25 for Freddie Woodman. In joint second spot, we have Vaclav Hladký with 12 in 25. And Edison, I'm putting him in there. 12 in 19 performances. Oof. Bonkers. 7 on the spin for him. Madness. In joint third, but joint fifth as well, as Scott Davies and Lee Burge, both with 11. Davies doing it in 22 and Burge doing it in 20. And picking up the rear, we've got Josh Griffiths, Alex Palmer and Rafael Cabral, all on 11 as well, but in more games. Richard, a rate my save to finish?
Let's do it.
Okay, we've got a Vinnie Howell here, Richard. He's 7 years old, so plays in the under-8s. He currently plays for Longwell Green Sports Grassroots and both Bristol City and Cheltenham Pre-Academy, hoping to sign a contract with Bristol City next year when old enough. Oh, he might be involved in this.
Let's have a look. Let's see what he's got.
They're from Keynsham, or Vinnie is from Keynsham in Bristol. Here is the save. Are you ready?
Okay, and we've got a view from behind the goal here. The strike's coming in. It's a slow motion one. Oh, that's going in the top corner. Oh, no, it's not. Fingertips diving to his left. We're going to see it again. We see it in normal speed now. So he sets well, sets high. He's got a little arm swing going on as well. I like that. Full stretch to his left. Fingertips round the post. It's actually as he sets. It looks like he's going to go to his right initially. Ball moves on him a little bit. Then you see the explosion to his left. And you see the weight come into his left leg. Pushes off that left leg. And if he doesn't get fingertips, that's going right in the top corner. Fantastic save.
Good stuff, Vinny. Thank you for sending that in. And if you'd like to have your save rated, it is very easy to do so. Just hashtag rate my save on Twitter at GKUnion. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. Or send it to us on WhatsApp 07503673020. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.